Hey guys, I'm Eric McLean.
And I'm Kelly Gramlich. It's time to talk some ACC football.
Let's go.
Happy Monday, everybody, and welcome into the Gramlich and McLean podcast presented by Ingles, the official supermarket of Gramlich and McLean. And Mac, we're on the same episode today. This is so exciting. It has been a minute. Mac has been the GOAT, the Caitlin Clark of partners on this pod, because while I've been covering Caitlin Clark and following along Women's Hoops, 18.7 million, what up? Mac has been really kind of taking the reins for our prospect series. So I appreciate you, Mac. How's it going?
You know, it is great to see you, KG.
Good to be seen.
It is great to hear your voice on this podcast together. And big shout out. There's so many things I like have to say and want to say to start this thing out. Huge shout out to the women that were just dominating this postseason.
Yeah, baby.
So much fun. So fun to see you being a huge part of that. 18 million. I mean, to the first time ever, more viewership on the women's than the men's championship game. I mean, just so many things that were just shattered this postseason, which was so cool. Makes me very excited, you know, for the women in the future and just how much this thing can continue to grow. So it's great to have you back. I will say you guys will see this interview with Jordan Reed. We're talking about NFL prospects. We love this guy. We had to bring him on every time. I didn't remember how well I have to share the ball when we're doing interviews. I'm sitting here. I asked like two or three things in a row. I'm like, dude, you got to stop. You got to let KG talk a little bit.
Mac, first of all, I really didn't notice that at all. So you're fine. Second of all, you and I have done, 380 episodes together, and you've maybe done 8 solo, and you forgot already?
I already forgot. Hey, look, a lot of stuff in this brain right now. A lot of stuff going on. But we've got it. We've got our guy back. Have an awesome episode here today where we talk about Jordan Reed's top 50 prospects, guys that he loves, guys that he thinks will really take another step, and then some others that we really like that we wanted to bring up. And there wasn't enough room on this episode, so we're going to probably have another and maybe even more after that leading into the NFL draft. Ton of great content, but today it's all about Jordan Reed, and it's always, KG, always all about our friends over at Ingles. They continue to give us a ton of love and support. Crazy that we're in year 2 of that partnership. Can we get a little hand clap for Ingles real quick for them being on this journey with us?
Come on. Yeah, Ingles is back for another year, which is so exciting. They are truly the best partner that we could ask for here on Gramlich and McLean. And I did post a video maybe a couple weeks ago watching March Madness. I was getting my dip on. I love a good, kind of turned a charcuterie board into a dip board, which heck yeah. And then I love doing that for the drafts. I mean, the NFL draft obviously coming up. That's what we're talking with Jordan Reed, who's the bomb. WNBA draft is tonight. If you're listening here on a Monday, that's going to be exciting. Drafts are really fun. Sure. Drafts are fun to me. It's good kind of, I mean, this in the best way, mindless entertainment, if you will. You don't have to be super locked in. You can just kind of watch. And you can really focus on your dips and your charcuterie boards, which is what's really important.
Or your smoked meats. Whatever you want to do. Okay. Whatever you want to do, make it happen. So big shout out to Ingles. We'll have a message from them. We also have some really cool stuff coming down the pipeline with Ingles. Cannot wait to share that with you guys. Be on the lookout. Be on the little eye emoji, little side eye emoji.
And
be
just,
on the lookout.
Just cool stuff in general.
So a quick message from Ingles.
Cool stuff in general. Some more, friends joining the squad.
It's all about content. All about content. So check all that out. Be ready. It's coming. But quickly, message from Ingles and then our friend Jordan Reed.
Did you know Ingles only sells USDA Choice and Prime cuts of meat? Maybe it's time to reward yourself. Our butchers cut all our meat fresh in the store every day. Grass-fed, organic, you name it. Not only that, we'll even cut it to order just the way you like it. And we grind meat fresh in the store multiple times a day. It's all in the bag. That's the best meat in town for the best folks in town. Ingles, low prices, love the savings.
What's up, everybody? It is my favorite time of the year. It is draft season. So, you know, we had to go to the best expert that we know, Jordan Reed, my brother. Great to see you. It seems like every time I turn on my TV, every time I open Instagram or Twitter, I see you doing something somewhere. I know this is a busy time, but I know it's your favorite time, my man. How you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. And it's always a pleasure joining both of you. This is my favorite yearly tradition. And I always compare the lead up to draft season like Christmas. The draft is only on the 25th this year. Christmas is usually on December 25th. So I'm just waiting for it to come, but I'm excited.
That's right. That's right. So give some people some insight. What is that type of coverage look like? Where will you be? How can they find you? What kind of stuff's going on?
Oh, man, how much time do we have? This may take me a long time. No, but it's fun. You know, the Pro Day Circuit is something that I just came off of. And what I love the most about the Pro Day Circuit is that you get a peek behind the curtain of these facilities. I was just at North Carolina a couple weeks ago. I was at Clemson the week before that, and then Georgia, Alabama, all these big schools, you're seeing these big upgrades that they made to the facilities. And you're just like, wow, you kind of forget that you're there to actually watch the prospects. You get so enamored with what they've dealt with over the past 3, 4, or 5 years. But it's fun seeing these guys compete. This is their opportunity to set up the rest of their lives. This is basically their resume outside of their tape and all the testing that they're doing. These past few months or so, this is their resume for the next potentially 10 to 12 years of their career. So it's fun seeing them go out and compete, seeing their teammates go out and compete as well. And then the coaches, them getting involved and just seeing the guys that they have developed over the past 3, 4, even 5 years. This is their opportunity to just let it all out.
Well, I was going to say, just think about the pressure of that. Like, I always think about that with pro days and these guys and what they have to deal with, and just that it all it doesn't all come down to that, but that is a big piece of it. And you have to perform on that day. It's got to be a nerve-wracking experience.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, it all roads lead to the pro day. And it's kind of crazy to say that just because you've been doing so many good things over the past 3, 4, even 5 years of your career. But one day, one simple day can change. It can make or break everything that you have done, or everything that you have built over the past few years.
Yeah, which is crazy, which is absolutely crazy. Well, let's talk about some of these people, man, because it's been super fun for us to cover them, you know, so intimately throughout their careers. And now we pass them off to you, right? We take them to the next level, and then you kind of hold their hand, get them to the NFL draft, get them to these NFL teams. And there's a lot of guys. I mean, there's some fun guys in kind of your top 50. And then I know there's some other cats that we want to talk about, we'll kind of finish up with. But I think everybody wants to know about Drake May. Everybody wants to talk quarterback. Everybody wants to know where they're going, because this class is sweet. And there's been some changing, I think, of the guard and where people think. So what do you like about Drake May? Where do you think he ends up? And, you know, just what's his ceiling in the NFL?
It makes me feel old talking about Drake, just because I actually live in the Charlotte area. So I've been familiar with Drake since he was at Myers Park High School, and he was an absolute stud when he was there and eventually transitioned over to North Carolina. So him now being draft eligible, it's like, man, it makes me feel old. But, you know, just evaluating Drake throughout the season, I went to 3 games. I saw him live 3 games. The size, he has everything that you want. The prototypical build at 6'4", 230 pounds. He has a very strong arm. But he just didn't have the season that a lot of people envisioned that he would have last year. Coming off of the big 2022 season, 38 touchdowns to only 9 interceptions, which is what he had during that breakout first season. But this year, there were a lot of ups and downs that he did experience. You saw some of the questionable decision-making, some questions about his footwork. But what I would add into that, EMAC and KG, is that there's a lot of nuance and details that go behind that, and why you just can't look at the surface level of stats with him and what went into last season. I think him losing Phil Longo, the offensive coordinator to Wisconsin, had a big deal with that, learning a new offense under Chip Lindsey, which did take some time to adjust for him, not getting his top receiver basically until a quarter of the way through the season, and Tez Walker with the NCAA stuff that was going on with him. And then Carolina's offensive line, they were not very good last year. So there were a lot of things that forced him to create some bad habits. And what you saw was he didn't play up to the par in certain games. And you look at the games like NC State, Clemson was another. And then there were some others, the first half of Pitt, of where you're like, man, this guy will throw a 60-yard bomb. And then the very next play, he'll throw a 5-yard pass in the dirt. So if he's able to just really bundle all of those traits together, what happens when we take some of the onus and some of the heavy lifting off of his plate once he gets to the NFL and allow him to develop? So I think there's a lot of variables that go into the evaluation of Drake May. No doubt, no question about it. He's very, very talented. but he has some things that he does need to clean up. But outside of Caleb Williams, I think he has the highest ceiling of any quarterback in this draft, and that's why he's my second-ranked quarterback. And there's going to be a lot of back and forth as far as who is Washington is going to take between him and Jaden Daniels. And we're splitting hairs with both of these guys, honestly. I mean, Drake's my third overall player, and Jaden's my number five overall player. And I don't think Washington can go wrong with either. But our job in scouting is to project who's going to be the best 3, 4, 5-plus years from now, not just looking at who's the best player right now. And there's no question about it. Jaden Daniels was the better player last year. He won the Heisman Trophy, had a breakout season. He was terrific. But when we're talking about down the road, who's going to be the better player, I would side with Drake May.
Interesting.
I love that. And I think what's interesting is how much older Jaden Daniels is. He's played a lot more football at this high level. So you're right. Like, is that his ceiling, which is really good? That's a great ceiling. You know, that's the best player in college football this past year's ceiling. But when you talk about pros and taking that next step, you know, just who can do that better? And I think I agree with you. I think Drake's ceiling is outrageous and only his better football ahead of him. I love what you said about the if we take some pressure off of him, because his defense wasn't good either last year. That dude had to do everything. Now, the run game improved, and I think that was a big help for sure. But everything else kind of around him really kind of stuttered, fluttered, wasn't great. And then you mentioned his footwork. I do want to touch on that quickly before KG jumps in or moves on to another prospect. I feel like we're moving a little bit away from that because I watch Josh Allen, I watch Patrick Mahomes, I watch Lamar Jackson, all these guys that are way more unconventional, not just, you know, the typical thing of what we look like in regards to their footwork. Is that still a super major concern for some of these coaches?
That's a great question. It somewhat is to some guys just because what you notice about Drake and, you know, talking to some people at the pro day, his first year there, there really was no emphasis on footwork. There was a lot of freestyling, and that's what happens a lot in the air raid offense. And if you remember, prior to Mahomes, nobody really liked taking chances on those air raid guys just because it's a freestyle type of system of where we're just trying to push the ball down the field. And there's some mixture of intermediate and short game, but with quarterbacks, it's just allowing him to play what I like to call sandlot football, just allow him his natural abilities to come out. And that's what you saw a lot of times with Drake. More so last year as opposed to his first year, his first year compared to last year. But you can tell it was a steep hill for him to climb, trying to match those certain dropbacks with the routes that they were running just because it was a foreign concept to him. So with the footwork thing, I think that's something that will improve over time with him just because there's going to be more emphasis on it. Just because if you're not able to throw anticipatory throws or be on time in the NFL, you're not going to be a starter for very long, especially if you're consistently late on those types of passes. So I think once Drake gets more exposure to those routes that marry up with the footwork that's required of him, he'll get better and he'll get the ball out more on time.
Jordan, before we move on from Drake May, I know your job is to scout and to tell us what he's going to become. Can you tell us, at least just from what you've heard, maybe your prediction as to where he goes?
It just depends on who you ask. Honestly, well, there's some people that like him as the second quarterback. Oh, for me, I would take him at 2 if I were Washington. He's my second-ranked quarterback in the draft, and he's my third overall player behind Marvin Harrison Jr. and Caleb Williams, just because you hear the names Justin Herbert and Josh Allen attached a lot to Drake May, and that's what we're talking about when we're talking about the ceiling with him, and it's all about landing spot. Now, my favorite landing spot, and I think he would be an absolute stud with, is Minnesota. If I were Minnesota, I would try to get up to number 3 overall. I will convince New England somehow, some way to move off of the number 3 overall pick to try to trade up for Drake May. Just imagine Drake with Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hockenson, and then their offensive line, Christian Darrisaw, Brian O'Neill, and then with Aaron Jones behind him. Now we're talking about somebody that's placed in a really good situation, and he wouldn't be rushed to play either just because they have Sam Darnold already there as their bridge quarterback. So you can be patient with him, but best case scenario for him to land with is Minnesota, without question.
All right, you heard it here, Vikings. Come on, let's go. Whoever's in charge over there, figure this out, because that would be really fun to see. And playing indoors for your home games, which is always nice. Okay, let's talk about Jared Verse. And I love your comps, Jordan, so if you can give us those comps, please do. Jared Verse, you have him 12th in your top 50 prospects. Kind of a slower start to the season, but then he really took off late for FSU. You compare him a bit to DeMarcus Lawrence. I really like that. So tell us what you think about Jared Verse, how he projects to the pro level, and where you see him getting selected.
So in scouting, and I'm sure both of you have seen this a million times, we use the terms floor and ceiling a lot with prospects. So when you're projecting ceiling, we're projecting who they eventually could be on the next level. So when I compare him to DeMarcus Lawrence, I see a very similar type of player. And of all these edge rushers in the draft, the one that I would feel the best about if we had a game tomorrow, as far as if I had to count on him to set the edge against the run, but also be dependable as a pass rusher and get pressure consistently and being able to do both at the same time in a game, it would be Verse easily. And I'm comparing him to Dallas Turner and then also Leiatu Latu. Both of those guys are like a mixture or either or. I think Turner has the most upside of the group and Latu is by far the best pass rusher. But when we're talking about the combination of run defense and being a consistent pass rusher, I think it's Jarrett Verse. And I saw Verse Clemson this year and I saw him in the ACC title game against Louisville. And I mean, he was phenomenal in both of those games. The best way that I can put it, guys, is that his hands are like a heavyweight boxer. Like that's how strong they are at the point of attack. You're seeing him jerk the heads of those offensive linemen back. You can just see the power in his hands and his ability to transition speed to power as a rusher is so unique.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you see tape, then you see combine and pro day all marry up with his bench press, with his explosive numbers, with his speed, all that there. And it just makes you excited. It makes you feel really good about it. He was a guy, man, that, you know, I've seen as high as in the top seven. I've seen as low as in the late teens. Where do you see him kind of falling in that aspect?
So my sneaky suspicion, and there's no inside information, is just a feeling. I think Chicago is really going to like him at nine overall to put him opposite of Montez Sweat. Not saying they're going to take him at nine. Chicago could trade back a couple spots and take him at like 11, 12, or 13 or somewhere like that. But pairing him with Montez Sweat, I think that would give them a fantastic duo in Chicago.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah, I like that too. I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, Chi-Town likes their pass rushers, man. They like those defensive ends to make it happen. Let's go to one of my favorite prospects in this draft for bias reasons, clearly, and Graham Barton, a guy that I've had the privilege to watch a long time at Duke. We were probably one of the first ones on him just because of his skill set, what he brings to the table. His versatility, to me, is what makes him so attractive. We had him on the podcast the other week, and you know, he was just saying how, you know, some people want me a tackle, some people want me a center, some people want me a guard. And I made the joke, well, you draft him, you get all five. You draft five offensive linemen when you draft that guy. I've seen you talk a lot about him playing center at the next level, which he did that successfully as a true freshman. But where would you start him? Would you start him at center? I'm in the camp of, if a guy's a tackle, let him prove to me he's not a tackle, whether that's in camp, OTAs, preseason games, maybe not season. I don't want trial by fire there. But what is your idea when it comes to that? And guys that may be tweeners from the tackle to guard to center position.
I'm right there with you, Emac. I've always had the belief of let these guys fail at tackle first. So show me that they can't be a tackle first just because it's a premium position. If you don't have tackles on your football team, you're probably not going to be very good on offense just because you have to have those guys. But a big reason that people project Barton to center is just the smarts, the length that he has, and just the fight and the strain that he plays with so consistently. And you can go back to his earlier days at Duke when he was their starting center very early on, and you saw the nastiness that he plays with. And I was at the pro day about a week ago now, and outside of the quarterbacks, it was the most impressive pro day that I saw of any position. He was that impressive. I mean, running 4.94 in the 40, the other testing numbers that he had was really impressive. Now, he primarily played center during the positional drills, which is a sign that a lot of teams see him as a center. But I look at teams like the Miami Dolphins at 21, the Dallas Cowboys at 24, the Pittsburgh Steelers at number 20 overall that need a day one starting center. I just don't see how Graham Barton gets outside of those top 25 picks.
Yeah, one thing that kind of has I guess, arose and people have talked to me or said things when I'm doing interviews about this guy is, do you look at the helmet at all? Do you look at that and say, oh, Duke, you know, when we can take Georgia or Bama or Oklahoma or, you know, these programs that produce it, what is an NFL, I guess, kind of scout's job with that, with not scouting a helmet or using that for any indication?
And this is the toughest part about scouting, in that you have to separate the traits from the school that they're playing at and just evaluate the player. And a lot of times you hear people helmet scouting in a sense. And a great example of that last year was CJ Stroud. All you heard was Ohio State quarterbacks never pan out in the NFL. Right. CJ Stroud goes on and he has one of the best, or arguably the best rookie season ever for a quarterback. So I never get caught up in the team that they're playing for. That's when you have to value the traits that they're showing on tape. And even if they're small school guys or, you know, not maybe an upper echelon ACC type of school, if they're consistently dominating every week in and week out, what do you think is going to happen in the NFL?
And Duke has produced some good pros lately, maybe not at the offensive line position necessarily, but other pros, other positions they have. Okay, speaking of the helmet, if you will, Clemson has produced some really good secondary players as of late. And Nate Wiggins, there's Mac. You knew that was coming. Nate Wiggins is a guy who might be, and I think you had in here, most improved defender in the country from last season to this season. And you think back, you know, there were a few games a few years ago for Wiggins. I think of the Wake Forest game at Wake Forest where him and the Clemson secondary were struggling. And now that secondary was great this year. Wiggins was great. And then he goes and runs a 4.28 40, which is just absurd, Jay Reid. So could he sneak into the first round? I've seen him kind of in towards the end of the first round, perhaps. Maybe some questions about his thinner frame. But tell us what you think about Nate Wiggins.
I'm so glad you brought up that Wake Forest game, KG, just
who
because,
could forget?
Or 2 years ago, I believe it was. That was, I think that was the turning point of his career. And I say that because they were going after him in that game. And you could tell, like, they figured that he was the weakness in their secondary. And they got him a couple of times. But to close out that game, he was the one that made the key deflection to help them secure that game. And that was an awesome game. I actually was at that game, so I'll never forget DJU making so many plays in that game to help secure it. But I think that was the turning point of his career, and he was lights out after that. And every single game that he played in following that point, he looked like that shutdown guy. Now, the frame is definitely thin at about right around 175 pounds, but the speed, he can absolutely fly. We saw him run the 4.240 at the combine, but the transition and the movement skills, the athleticism that he has, he's just such an easy mover. Watching him doing the positional stuff at the pro day, it was just amazing to see his transition skills getting in and out of his breaks. And, you know, Clemson is notorious for putting defensive guys into the draft and them going on to have plenty of success as well. So he's just that next guy in the pipeline. And, you know, this isn't a high-end corner draft. We don't have that Devin Witherspoon, Sauce Gardner, Derek Stingley type of corner in this draft that's a bona fide top 10 guy. So it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up going in that 15 to 25 range. I think that's probably where he'll end up being drafted.
Mm-hmm. And I think the most impressive or most, you know, really attractive thing about Nate Wiggins is his man-to-man skills. I mean, he number one, wants to be in man-to-man. And number two, you know, his previous years as playing wide receiver, he can anticipate and he knows. I mean, he only started playing corner as a senior in high school full time. And so I think his best ball still ahead of him there. Let me ask you about this, though, Jay Reid, because, you know, a guy that I saw, again, top 10 pretty much all year long, and then now that we're getting closer to this process, you just mentioned the late teens, the 20s, things of that nature. Why does that slide happen? Is that just more, you know, media guys and people like myself boosting that? And then once you guys and others start hearing maybe the real NFL side of it, how do we see a guy slip who had a great year all year long?
Well, I think it's a combination of a lot of things, honestly. And the tough thing for us on the media side is to project where guys are going to go, especially when we're building our big boards, just because we're not building our big boards for a scheme. So if I'm a zone scheme type of team, Nate Wiggins probably isn't going to be as high on my board just because he's predominantly a man-to-man type of corner. So, for example, somebody like, just name a random team like the Seattle Seahawks, who predominantly have run a bunch of cover three, I really don't want Nate Wiggins in that type of scheme just because he's going to thrive in man-to-man coverage. He doesn't really like to have his back to the sideline with his eyes on the quarterback. That's just not what he does. You want him playing man-to-man. You want him challenging those receivers as opposed to a team like, just naming a random team once again, the Arizona Cardinals that like to play a bunch of man-to-man coverage, and they like to challenge their receivers at the line of scrimmage and allow their corners to shadow some of the better receivers on the opposite side of the ball. So Nate Wiggins may be potentially higher on my draft board. But let's say there's a bunch of zone scheme teams in the top 12 to 15 picks. they're probably not going to be as high on Nate Wiggins as opposed to more man scheme teams being in the back end of the first round. So it really just boils down to scheme. Then also you have teams that have certain thresholds. There's just going to be some teams that don't value corners that are under 180 pounds just because a lot of them don't work out in the NFL just because they're too light. So a lot of teams stick to those thresholds, and then also it boils down to scheme as well.
That's fascinating. That was a I don't know why I would expect anything different. That was a much more in-depth answer than I thought you'd get. And it makes a lot of sense for all those reasons that you just laid out there. I think that's fascinating because a lot of people have, you know, messaged me about that. Why am I seeing this guy fall? And that, I mean, that's a perfect answer. That makes a ton of sense there. Let's move on. We're going to have a run of Seminoles here and talk about these guys. And I'm going to start with the wide receiver. This guy is an alien. A basketball player, Keon Coleman, we saw all year long jumping over people, running in for touchdowns, one-hand grabs over the middle, just punt returns, kick returns. I mean, just a freak with what he can do. And then you add in the size at 6'3", 215. It's just bonkers to see a guy like this. I think he, you know, as a guy that maybe it takes a little time, and some people get concerned about the 40, a 4'6", 40. But what I do want to ask you that I thought was fascinating was at the combine, a slower 40 running the 4.6. But then in the drills, he was by far the fastest receiver with the ball in his hand and running routes and going through the gauntlet and things like that. Do people look at that and say, whoa, why is this number so much different and such an outlier? And why isn't the 40 matching up to that?
That's a great question. And this, once again, boils down to what does your team value? Do you value that time speed at the combine, or am I going to trust the GPS and in-game speed type of stuff? And you saw that at the combine. That was a great snapshot of Keon Coleman as far as, you know, the 40 wasn't as fast as he wanted to be running 4.61. But when they're bringing up the next-gen stats and all these other things, when he's going through the gauntlet drill, he's over 20 miles per hour, which is what we saw in the game with him. Everybody knows that he plays faster than 4.61 on his game tape. It doesn't take a genius to see that at all. He was able to dominate last year, whether it's in the short to intermediate areas and then down the field deep as well. And, you know, I was at the Clemson game. I was at the Louisville game. He's one of those dudes that you see him up close, you're like, man, this dude looks like an NFL receiver. Every bit of 6'3", 225, 230 pounds. He reminds me a lot of Brandon Marshall, just trying to envision what he could be. Yeah. On the next level. But a great example of this is Puka Nacua from last year. Puka ran in the high 4.5s, but once again, he was another player. The gauntlet drill, he was the fastest of anybody. In-game speed, it shows up and it translates. He was phenomenal last year, arguably the best rookie season ever for a wide receiver. So it's just a matter of what do you value? Are you going to stick to the combine time speed with him? Or are you going to trust the GPS in-game stuff with Keon Coleman? That's what it boils down to with him.
And with Keon, I've seen him maybe the beginning of the second round. I've seen some of that. Do you think Keon Coleman could end up making it into the first round?
Yeah, I think so. I look at the Baltimore Ravens, who need a compliment to Zay Flowers. Mm-hmm. The Kansas City Chiefs, they need some help at wide receiver. And then,
that's not fair. Don't let that happen.
That would be a great landing spot. But, I mean, the Panthers at the top of the second round with 33 and 39. They have two picks inside the top 40.
That would be too smart of a pick for the Carolina Panthers. I don't
see him getting it outside of the top 40 at all.
Okay, I love that. Now, let's talk about another Seminole here in Braden Fisk. 3.5 tackles for a loss and 2 sacks in the ACC title game. That kind of tells you what you need to know. He also ranked really high in a lot of the drills for interior defensive linemen. And, you know, I think him and Verse are really good examples of what you said earlier. Small school guy. Like, if these two never transferred to Florida State, it's your job to find out that they're still these types of prospects. I know they have more proof on film now against better competition, but I just think that's really interesting. So talk to me about Braden Fisk and what he could become at the next level.
Yeah, so I don't keep like super close tabs on the transfer portal. I kind of just let it arrange itself out. And if a guy stands out, I write his name down throughout the year and start doing more research on him. So Braden Fisk was definitely one of those guys for me this year. And I didn't notice him until that Clemson game. That was the first time that I actually wrote down his name. So, and I'm not sure if you guys saw the play. So he actually subbed in late on one play, and he's like 2 seconds behind everybody. And he ends up making the tackle on the play. So I'm like, holy crap, who is this number 55 guy that's making so many different plays. So I tracked him from the Clemson game on. And then once again, like I told you guys, I was there at the ACC title game of where he was the best player on the field, regardless of position. I think he had three sacks in that game. He had like a couple tackles for loss, and he was just like everywhere. The high effort, the motor, the energy that he plays with, and the power at the point of attack. He is a little bit older. I know he's going to be a 25-year-old rookie. But if you're just strictly talking about the traits with him, he's one of those dudes that just has infectious energy. He plays with a lot of power. And then just the motor that he plays with, he outworks everybody on the first level.
Yeah. And one thing that, you know, I think it's so in-depth about the scouting world, because there are times that you have to go beyond the gridiron. You have to talk to these people. You have to figure out where they are mentally, their home life, all these different things. And sitting down with Braden Fisk, he was the first prospect that we had on for kind of our mini series that we had. And just hearing about his mental kind of fortitude and where he was of, man, for the next year, I'm going to be in this box and I'm going to be this guy. And it's zero dark 30. Like, this is what I want. This is the most important thing in my entire life. I'm not going out. I'm not doing this. I'm focused on football. To me, like, that's crazy. Like, I need that guy, because that's kind of that J.J. Watt. I'm going to do my career. I'm going to be focused. And then after, we can have fun. And but right now, that's the most important thing to me. I'm going to be fascinated to see where he ends up, because I think there's a lot of upside there. I know the age is a little bit interesting, but man, you've got some good years ahead with a beast like that. So I can't wait. We'll see. Let's transition a little bit here to a little bit faster, a little bit of a speed round, if you will, Jay Reed, because we have some guys that we're super interested in. Two running backs that are more, you know, I think they're a little bit more different than they are alike, but both really talented in Will Shipley and Trey Benson. You've got one that's a little bit more versatile, a guy that can be kind of used in a lot of different ways. And then Trey, man, line it up, hand it to him 20, 30 times a game. What do you like about the two of those running backs?
So Trey is actually my top-ranked running back in the draft, and he's another that I've had a lot of exposure to. And, you know, he doesn't have any A-plus type of traits, but he's just well-rounded in everything that he does. He doesn't fumble the ball. He has really good speed. He ran 4.39 at the combine, which was a phenomenal time for him. He runs hard, and I think he has a lot left to uncover as far as his receiving ability out of the backfield. And I go back to that Wake Forest game of where they pushed the ball to him a lot as far as being a receiver. He had an 80-yard touchdown out of the backfield on the running back screen. So I think he's one of those players that not only can fit in the passing game, but you can draw some concepts to involve him a lot too, as far as being a mismatch type of weapon on those nickel corners and then also those linebackers in space. So he's my top ranked running back, but his over-deeming quality is his ability to break tackles and his contact balance. You cannot bring this dude down with one tackler. He's going to force you to rally to the football and bring him down with multiple people. And just throughout history, when I'm scouting running backs, you have to have contact balance and you have to be able to create on your own. If you can't do those two things, you're most likely not going to be part of a committee or be a high-end starter on the next level. So I think he ends up going in the second round. I look at teams like the Dallas Cowboys at 56. I think that would be a really good pick for them. There's plenty of others that need running back help too. And then with Shipley, he's another that's probably more so of a complimentary back as opposed to a lead guy. But we all know that it's a complimentary league now, and it's a committee backfield type of league. Long gone are the days of guys getting 30, 35 carries a game just because they're not going to last through a 17-game season into the playoffs. So a lot of teams are shuffling two or three guys in and out. But you need a guy that can take a lot of that receiving load on, and I think Shipley is going to be able to do that, as well as getting, you know, 8, 10 to 12 carries a game.
Yeah, and he did show a good bit of that receiving ability this year for sure. Let's talk linebackers, Jay Reed. You have three ACC linebackers in your top five linebackers. So Peyton Wilson, Jeremiah Trotter, Cedric Gray, these three are guys that can absolutely play at the linebacker spot. Quick hitters on all of those, if you could. But also, I mean, Peyton Wilson, I've seen him rising up. He had a good pro day. He's a guy that I think would really impress when it comes to meeting with GMs, that kind of thing. So let's talk some linebackers. Tell me about those three.
Most impressive guy that I've met this offseason, and that's Peyton Wilson. Just a student of the game, his ability to have that infectious energy, and just a playmaker. Like, he has first-round tape to me, but you have to factor in the injury situations. But I haven't heard any red flags from teams at all. His medicals came back clean.
I haven't either, which is crazy to me because I thought that would be what was holding him back from kind of slipping into that first round.
And it's not an overly great linebacker class. Honestly, I don't know if we get one in the first round. But second round, we can see a lot of these guys come off of the board. And it would not surprise me if he ends up being the first or the second linebacker off of the board. But what I always love to see with linebackers and what you notice about linebackers in the NFL is that they're always at the top of the tackles for loss statistic in the NFL. Peyton Wilson has done that plenty of times throughout his time at NC State. He was absolutely phenomenal last year. You can rush him off of the edge. You can blitz him up the middle. He's really good in coverage, and he's a ball magnet. Somehow, some way, the ball just always lands in his hands for some odd reason, whether it's a tipped pass or anything. It just finds a way to number 11 in red, and he was able to do that consistently last year. And then with Jeremiah Trotter Jr., he's my fifth-ranked guy. He was okay at the pro day. You know, you like to see the movement skills be a little bit better. That's the big concern about him as far as movement and space. But as far as the NFL DNA, what he's been able to do throughout his career, and then what I like to call have a GPS on the ball, he just has a nose for wherever the ball is. He's done that consistently. And then Cedric Gray, who I think is somebody that's very underrated in this class, and my favorite part about his story is that they didn't know what they were going to do with him when he first got to North Carolina. He actually came as a wide receiver, and you still see a lot of those instincts with him now being on the other side of the ball, especially in pass coverage. I think he's very rangy. He'll hit you and he'll strike you. He'll come down and be consistent against the run, too. Needs to get a little bit better as far as disengaging and shedding, but I think that's the next part of his development.
Right. I want to go back to Peyton for a second because I do think there's – all that great upside, all the great potential, things of that nature. What's the best fit in your opinion? Where do you have him slotted or even reverse if you take the Viking Drake May approach? Where would be the best fit for him where he can really succeed right away?
I've already said it. It's the Dallas Cowboys. They have a huge need at linebacker. I mean, they were playing safeties at linebacker last year. We saw it in the Packers game when they lost in the playoffs, so where they're playing 210, 215-pound linebackers on the second level, and they were just exposed. So I would love to slot him in the middle of that defense and just let him go with it. I think he's that type of player of where he just plug and play.
Yeah, and he's so passionate about ball. Again, having talked to a lot of these guys and hearing his, you know, kind of mental fortitude. And really this year, he had the opportunity because of how old he was and the class schedule and things like that. He really had an opportunity this year to be a pro before he was a pro and to have more time in the film room. He likes to play or wants to, you know, have his play be like Keekly. I don't know if quite we can get to that level, but in regards to knowing what people are doing, in regards to film study, he's all about it. So it will be fascinating to see his transition and how quickly he's an impact player. Last one for you, Jay Reed, and I kind of want you to go wherever you want with this. Some last hitters, some sleepers, some guys you really like, Malik Washington, Ruka Roro, Jaheim Bell, Cam Kitchens, James Williams. Any of these guys that maybe that we didn't quite touch on in depth that you really like and think can make an impact quicker than not at the NFL level?
So there's two. You named one, Malik Washington, wide receiver, Virginia. I think he's phenomenal. He's one player, once again, was one of those transfer portal guys that I didn't really track when he came over. But you're noticing this short, stocky guy continuously making plays for Washington. And he was one of those players that he was phenomenal last year. Started his first 4 years of his career at Northwestern, then transferred over to Virginia. But the way that or how much range he has as a pass catcher to only be a 5'8.5" type of guy, he reminds me a lot of Jamison Crowder when he was coming out of Duke. Now, I think he's a little bit stronger than what Jamison was. But as far as the speed, the body control and just the hands, I think he's very reminiscent of what Jamison was. And Jamison was a really good player for a very long time. I think he's still playing to this day. He's still bouncing around a little bit. But he's played 10-plus years in the league, and I think Malik is going to be a similar type of player. And then last one that you did not name, so I'm going to throw you for a curveball here. This guy is not getting any love at all, but his name is Elijah Jones. He's a cornerback from Boston College.
Come on. That's right.
He's one that I just don't understand why he's not getting more love. His testing numbers were through the roof at the combine, and the tape is very consistent with him. I think he has the potential 2 to 3 years down the road from now, he can be a starter.
Ooh, okay. I like that, Jay Reed.
Man, well, I love
it. Wait, Mac, one more, because I know our Florida State fans will get mad if I don't ask this. Jordan Travis was number 9 on your quarterback list. He's obviously dealing with we all know, a terrible injury. What are you hearing about JT? What do you think? Do you think he could get drafted? What are your thoughts there?
So I've had an opportunity to talk to Jordan twice now leading up to the process. I talked to him. He was there at the ACC title game. I talked to him on the sideline for a good little bit. He was in really good spirits at the time. And then also my second time was at the East-West Shrine Bowl in Frisco, Texas. Obviously, he couldn't participate, but he was there meeting with teams. And he said he met with over 25 teams when he was there. So there's an obvious interest in him. And just talking ball with him for 10 to 15 minutes both of those times, you could tell the IQ was outstanding, the leadership skills. I mean, Mike Norvell could talk about him for hours and hours at a time. We know the leadership skills and the intangibles are off the charts. Is a little bit undersized. Everybody knows that, but a prolific career. I look at teams like the New York Jets, the Arizona Cardinals, the New Orleans Saints that could take a late round developmental type of quarterback. I think there's still a chance that he does get drafted in the later rounds, but at worst, if he's a priority free agent, he will not be on the market for long. There's going to be a lot of teams that are in the market for him. But all signs point to him eventually being ready sometime in training camp based on the information that I have gathered with him and what he talked to me. But everything's right on schedule with him. And, you know, the infectious energy and just the leadership skills. I only talked to him for 30 minutes total at both of those stops. And you could tell just the energy that he gave off was terrific.
Yeah. Love to hear that.
I love that. Great question, KG. And definitely excited for that young man, and it's unfortunate timing of it all, but he'll figure it out. He'll figure it out. It's already written. And Jay Reed, you're the best. I appreciate you, brother. This was so much fun, your insight, all of that. And can't wait to see how right you are with all this. I think 100% is what we're going to bat.
Zay Flowers made me look good last year.
That's right.
Roll the tape from last year.
That's what we do. That's what we do. That's what we do. Appreciate you, man, always.
No problem. Thanks as always.
Thanks again to Jordan Reed, who is truly so good. We've been having him on now for a couple of years. And as Mac, I don't know why Riverside keeps doing this. It's like the Mac stuff. I don't think mine works. I don't think mine works. It's just Mac.
Wait, I'm trying to do the fireworks and now it's not happening.
Okay, wait, quick sidebar.
We can't do it on command. We have no idea how
we
it happens.
We don't know anything. Quick sidebar. Did you know this is how millennials do hearts? Did you know that Gen
you
Z, yeah,
this.
They do it like this or something? What weirdos.
My hands are too big. I can't.
What weirdos.
I can't do it. So I have to go here. Look at all these hearts that I have so much love coming
over
here.
So much love
here.
For Jay Reed. And speaking of Gen Z, all these guys getting drafted are weirdo Gen Zs. And
Gen Zs.
I really, first of all, just Jay Reed. That's where I was going. Jay Reed has blown up. I've seen him all over ESPN these days. And rightfully so. He does a really good job. And I feel like he's great at what he does. And he's not like a hot take machine, right? He's not going to say, some rando quarterback is going to be the greatest quarterback we've ever seen. And no one really thinks that, but you're just saying it for attention. That is not Jay Reed. And I really loved his thoughts on Drake May, how he's higher on Drake May than some other people. He's high on a guy like Jared Verse, Braden Fisk, some of these FSU people. Trey Benson is number one running back. That was really interesting. So a lot of really good stuff from Jay Reed. We appreciate him.
No, yeah, he's the best. And I think something that you and I just appreciate so much is when people prepare and work hard. I mean, it was funny, pre-interview, we're kind of chatting about a couple of different things. And, you know, I said, we might talk a little this guy. We might talk about a little this guy. And he's like, dude, it's all good. Like, whoever you want to bring up, we can talk about. And I was just like, I love that. I love that. And, you know, it just when you love what you do, when you do what you love, it makes everything easier. And, you know, it's something that none of us take for granted for sure. KG, all the awesome stuff you were doing. We're going to get a little bit of lull here, summer guest period time, and then crank it back up. It's truly the best and cannot wait. So more draft content coming up, guys. Talked about a lot of great players. We'll have more to dive into. Cannot wait to continue to cover them and then just to do a draft recap show, see where everybody goes. That's another one of my favorite ones as we kind of our final farewell. See you later. Have fun in the NFL. We'll
be
here.
Fun.
We're doing college. That's right. Appreciate everyone tuning in. Appreciate Jordan Reed. Gramlich and Mac Lane here presented by Ingles. We need your help, though, continuously. Over on YouTube, subscribe, jump in our channel, leave some comments. Anything that Jay Reed said that you're either against or with, let us know. And let us know what he missed on and where you want these guys to go. We always are super interested in that. And, of course, the OGs over on Apple Podcasts as well. Rate, review, subscribe. But until next time, we'll see y'all.